Well, every once in a while, you come across someone who just understands the big picture. We've got that tonight with Greg Braden, author of The Divine Matrix, The Science of Miracles as well. We're going to talk with Greg about bridging time, space, miracles, and belief. I'm looking forward to this. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me give you a little bit of Greg Braden's background for you. A former senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta Aerospace. He is a computer geologist for Phillips Petroleum, technical operations manager for Cisco Systems. And Greg is considered as a pioneer in bridging the wisdom of our past with science, healing, and peace of our future. For at least 20 years, probably more than that, Greg has searched high mountain villages, remote monasteries, forgotten texts to uncover their timeless secrets. Now, to date, his work has led to such paradigm-shattering books, The Isaiah Effect, The God Code, The Divine Matrix, Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief. He's come out with a new DVD series, of course, called The Science of Miracles. And we're going to talk with him about miracles and about the science behind it right now. And here he is, Greg Braden. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Well, good evening, George. It's a pleasure to hear your voice. I'm going to say happy 2008 to you and all of our friends listening tonight.
Greg, the clock is just ticking. What's happening? Slow it down.
Hey, well, we were listening just before this program came on, and I heard your announcement that your contract's been extended until the end of time. So I'm going to say congratulations on that as well.
Yeah, just my luck for the end of time to be next week. But no, it's we're really happy with this. And
congratulations. We're lucky to have you, George, and I'm just thrilled to hear that.
You have done a remarkable job with your work. But you've really touched on something this time, Greg, and it's a great night to talk with you about it coming out of the holidays with the science of miracles. And you've looked at it with a different perspective, and I want you to tell us a little bit about your reason for going into this, first of all.
Well, the reason that I'm going into to all that we're doing, first of all, I think that you and our listeners probably know that by the time a book makes it to the shelves of a bookstore or a DVD is produced, that the information that was in that book or in that DVD is just the tip of the iceberg of a much broader body of information underlying all of that. And as authors, we have to choose what it is that and how we share that to bring our work to a greater visibility. What we know is that we're facing a time in the history of our country, in the history of our world. Many people sense that something very different is happening now, and the experts are now telling us that that is precisely the case, George. They're saying that this is an unprecedented time in the history of our planet, of our civilization. And the experts were called together for an amazing conference in the year 2005, and the results of this conference were so profound that they were actually published as a special edition of the journal Scientific American. It was titled Crossroads for Planet Earth in 2005. And the bottom line is that the experts, the scientists, the engineers, the social architects, the religious leaders, so many different disciplines, they all came together and they identified a number of scenarios ranging from disease and competition for resources to energy production and war. And what they said was that any of these scenarios alone have the power to forever change or possibly end civilization and the world as we know it, any one of them alone. And what makes our time, this moment in history, so powerful and so profound is that all of these events are happening at the same time. And they said, we've got the next 8, maybe 10, 15 years to figure this out, or nothing else is really going to make much difference. The Harvard biologist E.O. Wilson identified our time in history, and I love the term. He says we're entering what he calls a bottleneck in time.
That is a good term.
He says it's a time when our resources and our ability to solve the problems of our day are going to be pushed to their limits. Boy, I can't believe anybody doesn't feel that that's precisely what's happening right now. So that is the context within which we're looking at the science, Some of the science, George, is so new it hasn't made it into the textbooks yet. And many of the discoveries are validating some of our most ancient and cherished spiritual traditions, the very traditions that were lost and edited from Western culture 1,700 years ago, but they've been preserved in some of the most pristine monasteries in some of the most remote parts of the world. And when we factor these discoveries into our time in history, George, it changes everything. So the reason I'm excited, and you can tell I'm excited about tonight, is because what we're going to talk about over these next couple of hours is so fundamental that there is nothing that any guest could bring to this program that is not somehow impacted by the discussion we're going to have tonight. Everything from the elections of the nations, to the peace between nations, to the healing of our bodies, and it all comes back to our relationship to our world and the universe and things that we're only beginning to understand.
Has science stumbled into this where, let's say, people who are experts in metaphysics knew this for years?
Well, what has happened is, first of all, I'm just going to preface this. I was trained in the hard sciences. I come from the world of science. I support the scientific method. And I'm not down on science, George. I think science has done some wonderful things.
No doubt.
For where we are in the world today, and it's allowed us to do things that were miracles in my grandfather's time. Before he died, he and I had a conversation where he told me that the new discoveries were happening so fast, he just couldn't keep up with them. They were so amazing in his mind, he couldn't find a way to make sense of them. And it was all based in science. And as good as science is, what we're going to talk about tonight, George, is a couple of assumptions that were made over 100 years ago. And science is only about 300 years old in terms of the scientific method.
Right.
So we accept science as beginning around the time of when Newton formalized the laws of physics. That's when we say science actually began. Well, about 100 years ago, a series of experiments were conducted to settle the argument as to whether or not there's a field of energy that connects everything and whether or not we're connected with that field. The results of those experiments, in my opinion, were poorly interpreted, and they have set us on a false course, false assumptions in science that have led us into a series of dead ends and up against the brick wall in trying to explain the universe and the way we work within the universe. So the first false assumption, we'll just say it right now, the first false assumption is that the space between things is empty. We now know that's absolutely not true. And the second false assumption is that our inner experiences, what we call thought, feeling, emotion, and belief, have no effect on the world beyond our bodies. And I'll tell you, nothing could be further from the truth. And this is what the new discoveries are showing us, and this is what changes everything.
Why is it important for us to grasp the fact that there may be things between spaces?
If in the assumption, first of all, we'll go back. The experiments that were conducted in the late 1800s, the very famous Michelson-Morley experiment, was conducted in 1887 publicly. What a lot of people don't know is that it had already been conducted in 1881 privately. And both times, the scientists came up with the same results. And the results suggested that everything is separate from everything else. If there's nothing filling the empty space, in lay terms, it suggests that everything is separate from everything else. And for that reason, what happens in point A has no effect on what happens in point B. If it looks like it does, it's only a coincidence. And we have an entire civilization now built upon the belief that what we do in one place doesn't have an effect or doesn't make any difference on something that's happening somewhere else. And that false assumption has written us, humankind, right out of the equations of the universe and how things work, and it's been the stumbling block for what we're calling this unified field theory that is yet to come together. There's some promising foundations out there, like string theory, superstring theory, that have been around since the 80s. But we've got to ask, if these theories are the right path, if they're putting us on the right path, and they've been around for 20-plus years with the best minds of our time working on them and the best computing power we've ever had, why are they still theories? Why have they failed to unify the forces of nature and provide a single story that explains the way the universe works and our role in the universe. And this is where everything's changing, George. This is why it's so exciting to be able to share this information tonight.
Could this also be the fact that there is this wireless internet out there in the universe or the multiverse that seems to connect everything?
I think that's precisely what I think is happening, George. It's so interesting. We talk about the great challenges of our time in history on the one hand. On the other hand, the inability of science to solve some of our problems. I tend to look at the big picture, and what I see happening is the very conditions that we've created, that science has created in our world, the conditions of disease and energy consumption, the possibility and the threat of global war, those very conditions are now driving us to understand who we are, to survive the conditions that we've created. And I think what is so incredible about this time in history is this is when we get to find out what's real and what's not, what works and what doesn't. You know, we've heard from the mid-1980s and the harmonic convergence that we're all one, we're part of our world, and that we have powers beyond our most amazing dreams. And people would like to believe that.
You know, Greg, we might not have enough time to figure that. We won't have the time to make the mistake to figure it out. I think the clock has really ticked beyond where we should be.
Well, I agree with you, George, that the clock is ticking very quickly. I'm going to share tonight there is a global project that has just come online early in this year, the 2008, that I'm going to be able to talk about tonight that allows every one of our listeners to participate and not just watch, not just observe, and not just guess as to whether or not they're having an effect, but to know that they're literally having an effect upon the fields of the Earth, upon fields that are called coherent fields of the Earth that affect everything from the peace between nations to the health of our bodies to our sleep patterns to our relationships. I'm very excited to be sharing this information tonight. So we've got going to cover a lot of ground over these next couple of hours.
And is it our ability to tap into this that changes these things for the better for us?
Well, yes. The fact is that we all already tap into it. The key is to do so consistently, predictably, and in a way that allows us to create the conditions in our lives that we're choosing to help us to become better people and have a better world. That's the bottom line to this ancient traditions that I'll be talking about that we found practiced in the monasteries in the mountains of Egypt and the highlands of central China and Tibet. And now our own science is bearing out the very principles that have been preserved in these ancient wisdom traditions in non-scientific ways. So we walk into a monastery in the highlands of central China, and the monks aren't talking about quantum fields and holographic experiences. What they do is they giggle because to them this is so basic. They giggle and they say, this is the way you work, and this is the way your world works. And when we marry the wisdom that's been preserved in some of these remote and pristine, magnificent temples and monasteries in some of the hardest-to-get-to parts of the world, we marry what's been preserved there with what the best science of our time is now telling us. What I believe we're finding, we're building for ourselves a spiritually based science that for some people sounds like an oxymoron, but I believe that this spiritually based science will meet the challenges that we're talking about tonight. And George, while I agree the clock is ticking, what we're finding is that the changes happen so quickly. I think we've got all the time we need, and now is the time to make the choices.
Now, Greg, these false assumptions of science that you talk about the space between things,
sure,
and also that our inner experiences have no effect on whatever happens. And both of these, of course, you're saying are false assumptions. I agree. How did we get to the point to understand that they're false assumptions? How did we know they were wrong?
Well, this is what's so interesting. It's like the great secret that everybody knows except us, George. And when you leave Western culture, what I've found in my first journey into the Egyptian mountains was in the mid-1980s. And what I found was that the people that were preserving this wisdom now, their traditions, some of them 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years old, they begin with the place where our 300-year-old science has only arrived. In other words, science has spent 300 years debating whether or not there's a field of an essence that connects everything, and now they're just arriving at the place where scientists say, okay, the field's there, what do we do with it? And this is the place where these ancient traditions began, and they have spent 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years learning how to apply this in their lives. So for me, this is the value of going into a living culture, because I'm not interpreting the hieroglyphs on an ancient temple wall. I'm speaking to another human, eye to eye, heart to heart, man to man, or woman to woman, and I'm asking them, usually through a translator, I'm asking them, when you just did this miraculous thing that I saw, when you levitated off the floor, when you created this healing in the body of another person, how did you do it? You know, what did you do inside your body that created that effect?
And if I do they know?
They do know. All and right. If I don't understand what the answer is, I can ask them again and again until they either answer me or they get frustrated and ask me to leave the monastery. But they do know, and they're amazed that we do not, George. And this is why it's called the great secret everybody knows except us. Now, our own scientists have rediscovered the existence of this field. And for some of our listeners that would like to believe that this is true and maybe have never heard this, it's been published in mainstream journals. One of the most amazing was the journal Nature. A gentleman named Silvertooth reproduced the Michael Morley experiment.
Silvertooth?
Silvertooth is his name, yeah. Reproduced the experiments in 1986, the same experiments that Michelson Morley did back in 1887, and it's in the journal Nature, for people that know. It's a very prestigious journal.
Sure is.
Volume 322, August 1986, page 590. Silvertooth, under the auspices of the United States Air Force, reproduced the nearly 100-year-old experiments done by Michelson and Morley. The results of his experiment showed that there is, in fact, a field of energy that connects everything in our world, and the field was found to exist within the same parameters predicted 100 years earlier by Michelson Morley. So this should have made the cover of CNN and Time magazine, but people just aren't talking about it much.
Why not, Greg?
You know, I think what I've found. And then I'll explain what I found, and then I'll explain why this may not be important. There is a reluctance in much of the mainstream science to accept what this means, because it changes everything, George. Entire careers, textbooks, ways of thinking have to be reevaluated if we know that this field is out there, on the one hand. But on the other hand, if we're waiting for science to acknowledge in the textbooks what we already know in our ancient and spiritual traditions and what the experiments are already showing us, we might wait another 10 years. But the beauty of what we're going to share tonight is that we don't have to wait for it to be acknowledged in the textbooks to apply it in our lives and in our world in a meaningful way. Now, we can explore it for another 100 years, and obviously we'll know more then than we know now. But I firmly believe that we can apply what we do know. And the experiments, the studies are showing us that we all have the ability to use this field in ways that we're only beginning to understand, for everything from personal healing in our bodies to collective healing in our world, and literally influencing the decisions of peace or war between nations. And documented studies have shown that this has happened in the past with quiet kinds of experiments. But these are new experiments now that are coming online, and we can all participate, and it changes everything about the way we think of our time in the world.
Okay, Greg, I'm looking forward to all of this. And when we come back, how about this? Who put the field there? Did science? Did it just happen? Or was there, as you say, perhaps the divine matrix behind all of this? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Greg Braden on Coast to Coast AM. Did you pick up the After Dark newsletter yet? Maybe you got it for the holidays. Well, if you don't have it, you can call 1-888-727-5505, or you can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. You get 13 issues for the price of 12. It is a great magazine. It's a newsletter, but it comes in full color. Great stories. It's part of Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Greg Braden, our guest. By the way, Greg's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, but if you're driving around somewhere and, well, you don't have time to go and look at it today, it's GREGGBRADEN.com. Greg, who put this field there? How did it get there?
Wow, that's like the easy question that we usually start these interviews with. But the truth is, George, no one knows. No one knows where this field comes from. The assumption is, through the best scientific guess, is that the field has always been in existence and originated with the Big Bang, or whatever the primal release of energy that we believe it is that began this universe that we're living in right now, this space-time realm.
Right.
As the mathematics now say that space and time are so closely related. I'm a very visual person, and so if this helps our listeners, if we can kind of think of an infinitesimally small point in space and time that begins to enlarge and radiate in all directions simultaneously, as the space expands, part of that space is this field. And because the space is believed and the measurements suggest that the universe is still expanding, this field is still expanding, and it's still in motion. And this ties back to the discoveries or the experiments that were done in 1887. The first 30 minutes of this program, we covered a lot of ground in a really short period of time, intentionally, because I wanted to be able to tie back into those ideas as we go through the evening. But for listeners that may not be familiar with this landmark experiment in 1887, a little over 100 years ago, it was called the Michelson-Morley experiment, and it was designed to solve the mystery and in the controversy that was raging in the scientific community in the late 1800s. Is there a field of energy that connects everything, or is that the idea that it exists, is that false? And at that time, this field was called the ether. And I'll let our listeners know, if you want to get laughed off of a scientific stage really fast today, you can bring up the term the ether. Because even yeah. Today, even though we know the field is there, that term is not accepted as a valid description of the field. But the bottom line to this experiment is it was believed that the field is in motion. So if the motion could be detected, it would prove the existence of the field. This would be akin to our listeners, if you were to go outside and moisten a finger and hold it above your head right now, and if you felt no wind blowing against your finger, you concluded that no air exists. Of course, that's a false conclusion. Just because the wind isn't moving doesn't mean that the air doesn't exist. But this is the equivalent of the thinking behind this field in 1887. Well, from that time forward, even in the textbooks, if your kids are in school today or those of you listening in school, if your textbooks will not acknowledge the existence of this field, even today, and it has been the great stumbling block that has prevented us from unifying the four forces of nature, the unified field theory that allows us to move forward in physics and solve some of the great mysteries in the universe.
Well, let's talk about some of these miracles, Greg. And first of all, your definition of a miracle is what?
Well, my definition, I one of the first things I did when I was in the monasteries and they began talking about some of the things that were possible when we use this connection between our inner experiences and our outer world, the guides and the translators that were with me were calling them miracles. But it was interesting because the monks and the nuns and the abbots that do these things, they don't call them miracles at all. So I asked myself the same question. I said, well, just what is a miracle? A commonly accepted definition of a miracle is that it's something that appears inexplicable by the laws of nature as we understand those laws today. And it suggests that although the laws of nature that we understand are valid as far as they go, that we may be missing some. There may be laws or ways of seeing the universe that we simply have not accounted for. Because when we accept what it is that the experiments are showing us and what these people are demonstrating, it redefines miracles for me. It says that maybe there really aren't any miracles. They're only miracles until we understand why they're possible, and then they no longer become miracles. Then maybe they're a technology, an inner technology. There's a great mystery that is taught in many of the mystery schools that unfolds kind of like a flow chart. And when I do my presentations, I'm a very visual presenter, and my challenge on radio is to do this without those illustrations. But in the minds, in our listeners' minds tonight, if you can kind of visualize this flow chart, the spiritual traditions of our past have always said that there's something that we do in our bodies that triggers a process inside of us that interacts with the forces of nature and changes our physical world. That is shown as a flow chart. And if we don't understand what it is that we're doing and how it affects the forces of nature, when we see the effects, we say that we've seen a miracle, a tumor disappearing inside the body of a living human in less than 3 minutes. That would be medically considered a miracle. There is another flow chart. Now, based on what our own science has shown us, these are documented scientific experiments. They're published in accredited academic and scientific journals that say that heart-based feelings and emotions change the electrical and the magnetic fields in the human heart, and that when those fields change, they produce quantum effects that extend beyond the heart and change our physical world.
Well, isn't that also, Greg, like saying stress kills because it changes you?
Sure, it could be the same thing. When you say these two flow charts, what you're saying, George, the science has now said the same thing as the ancient spiritual mysteries. They're saying it in modern terms. And when we begin to understand this flow of energy, maybe they aren't miracles at all. Maybe it is a way of being that we're only beginning to understand. And the reason I'm so passionate about this, and I know you can hear it in my voice, is that this isn't just any old time in history. And it may be that our understanding, as we complete and bring our understanding of who we are full circle, that we can meet the challenges of our time, not just meet them. We don't want to just meet these challenges. We want to transcend to rise above the great challenges of our time so that we've got these future generations that we're talking about. And that is what I believe is at stake in terms of our willingness to accept what our own science has shown, what the ancient traditions have always held as true, and our willingness to marry these two great ways of knowing, science and spirituality, into a wisdom that will serve us and help us to become better people and create a better world today. And I think the conditions are pushing us to come to just that conclusion.
Well, I think so, and I want to talk about what I think is happening to people these days and see if you can help shed some light on that. But would you consider this a miracle? A truck driver falls asleep at the wheel. He's going over the side of a road, maybe over a cliff. He wakes up to see a hand on his steering wheel pulling him back onto the road. And there's nobody else in the cab. It's just him. And it's not his hand. Would that be a miracle, or is that something else, like an angelic intervention?
You know, well, the answer is yes. And that is the beauty and the crux of where we find ourselves at this time in history, George. It's what we allow ourselves to accept as the reality that we're living in right now. Are there intelligent forces in non-physical form that live in this field that connects all things? Do we communicate with them? Can they communicate with us? Can they affect our physical world? I believe the answer, from my experience of those, is yes. So when I see those things or I hear stories like that, well, I'm always in awe. I'm less surprised because the mechanism is in place and it makes perfect sense. But if we choose to live in an understanding that says that we are completely separate from everything else, there's no stuff that connects the other stuff in the universe, then it would be mysterious to us as to how something like that can happen. And we'd say, you bet, that's a miracle.
Yeah.
That, isn't that interesting? Because both answers are correct. It's our perspective. It's how we choose to see the world and our relationship to the world.
Can science document this with instruments, or is it just with gut?
Well, George, that is, you just hit the nail right on the head. One of the reasons that science and scientists have had such a hard time coming to these conclusions is this field of energy that is so new, by the way, that scientists have yet to agree upon a single term. So you'll hear former Apollo astronaut Ed Mitchell, for example, calls it nature's mind. I've shared the stage with him many times. We've had these conversations. Stephen Hawking calls it the mind of God. Max Planck, the father of quantum theory, calls it the matrix. And the whole movie series was based on this field of the matrix.
Right.
Now we're calling it the divine matrix. Regardless of what we're calling it, it is an unconventional field of energy. It doesn't work the way TV and radio broadcasts work. It doesn't work the way electricity works. So our equipment simply has not been built to detect this kind of energy. But now that the energy is, we're beginning to understand it, and some of the open-minded, visionary physicists of our time are acknowledging the existence of this field. There are ways not to measure it directly, but rather indirectly. They say if the field exists, then we should see these kinds of results, and they're seeing precisely these kinds of results.
Why, Greg, without training, do some of us believe it exists?
That is a good question. I think it's the way we're wired, George. Some of us were fortunate enough to be raised in families that were either accepting or open-minded enough, or, you know, America is called the great melting pot of the world. We have cultural and spiritual traditions that converge here from many different parts of the world beyond the Western mindset, and they bring with them the ideas, the very basic idea that everything is connected. You know, the Aboriginal traditions in Australia are some of the oldest documented continuous lineage of spirituality that we have in the world today. By some anthropological estimates, they go back over 50,000 years. For 50,000 years, their story has never changed. And they say that the world began with the existence of a web or a net of energy upon which everything is built. The Hindu traditions say the same thing. The great god Indra wove this web. It's called the abode of Indra. A very non-scientific language describing precisely what it is that we're finding today. So it may be that many of us were simply raised in families and cultures that acknowledge this. I'm just going to share an interesting story. I worked at Martin Marietta Defense Systems up in Denver, Colorado during last year's the Cold War. And at the water fountain and over the coffee machine, our role in reality was the last thing that anybody would ever talk about. These were hardcore, brilliant minds, scientists, engineers, many of them former military. The day that I turned in my resignation, I left. And they all said, what company are you going to, thinking that I was going with a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm going to go write a book. And they said, well, that's good, but, you know, what are you going to do for a living?
Yeah.
So there's a whole story going on there. But when they found that I was not going with the competition, they invited me to come in to my company and give a half-day seminar on company time on precisely the things that we're talking about now so that my colleagues could see that I wasn't going with a competitor. But the reason I'm sharing the story is by the end of that program, people came out of the woodwork who I had worked with for years, day in and day out, and they said, Greg, I never knew that you believe this way. I believe this way. My family believes this way. I was raised this way, and they never really felt safe talking about it in that culture, and I'm not singling that culture out as my experience, but I think it's true in much of our corporate culture today. So I think there's probably much more willingness in the broad general public to accept what our own science is showing us, because there's a sense within all of us that it exists anyway. I think that's why we're drawn to the kinds of movies like The Matrix. We just saw The Golden Compass last night about parallel universes and The Last Mimsy. These kinds of movies, we're drawn to see those because they do touch something very, very deep within us.
Well, as you work in your DVD, The Science of Miracles, what did you find to be one of the most fascinating aspects of that work?
The DVD was it was an opportunity in a what I call an illustrated interview video format to bring together many of these ideas in about an hour in a really potent way to share with a broad general audience, kind of catch them up quickly with where our science is, how it fits within the context of some of our most ancient as well as cherished spiritual traditions. And I don't want to put you on the spot, George. Have you had a chance to see any of the video at all? Did you get
it? I sure did. Yep. You sent it straight to the mailing address here in St. Louis, so we did pick it up.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And the reason I'm asking, then, you saw a section of a video clip in there of a healing that was documented inside the body of a living woman.
Mm-hmm.
It was filmed in a medicineless hospital in Beijing, China. And I think the opportunity for me to study with the man that filmed that footage, to learn the techniques that were shown in that film, and to know how real these effects can be, I think, in answer to your question, that was one of the most profound experiences for me. For listeners that haven't seen this film and are wondering what we're talking about, it is there. I was given permission to show a brief segment of a video that was filmed. It's a handheld video. It's not professionally done. A medicineless hospital in Beijing, China, where practitioners are using ancient techniques to affect the healing. And in this case, it's the healing of a cancerous tumor inside the body of a living woman. So she's awake. She's conscious. She believes in the process. She's reclining through an ultrasound. We can look inside of her body real time, while the practitioners are applying the techniques that they have learned and preserved for thousands of years. And it's not time-lapse like a Discovery Channel flower, you know, opening over the period of a week. This is real time. In 2 minutes and 40 seconds, the cancerous tumor literally fades and disappears from her body. And the success rate for these kinds of healings, this isn't a one-off healing, the success rate in this part of China is about 95% after 5 years if the people will follow the life-affirming protocols that they're taught, which are all things that we're learning now. It's about nutrition, movement, breath, diet, all those kinds of things.
Attitude?
Attitude, well, that's the piece that is we're just learning about now, because what these practitioners have done is they've created a feeling inside of their bodies, specifically in their hearts. They're feeling in their heart as if the woman is already healed. They're not judging this tumor as right, wrong, good, or bad. They're not telling it to go away. And there's a subtle and powerful difference here. They're not making the tumor disappear. They're choosing the healing of the woman, the health of the woman. And I've shown this. I've shown it to the United States Air Force Medical Corps in San Antonio, Texas. I've shown it at medical conferences all over the world for 5 years. And people say to me, Greg, that's a miracle. We'll have to study it. And it's only a miracle until we understand the technology.
When we come back, let's talk about the Global Coherence Project that you're working on and how some of us can participate in this, Greg. And also later on in our last hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Questions for Greg Braden, of course, and also maybe some of your miracle stories. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.